Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 46. This is Jamie Russo. Thanks for listening. This episode is sponsored by the Global Workspace Association. When this airs, we will have just launched our 2017 industry survey for operators and members of shared workspaces. Staples has generously donated two Microsoft Surface Pro 4s, and each participant has the option to enter to win. But more importantly, do this because we all want to make the right decisions as we manage into coworking 3.0. This survey is designed to deliver detailed insights into the most profitable layout for shared workspaces, data by market on meeting room revenue, community manager salaries, and more. We need data from each and every one of you in order to draw the most reliable conclusions. No one wants to make business decisions based on small sample sizes. The data will come right back to you in the form of detailed reports that will help you and your current business or your future business. Please go to globalworkspace.org/survey to fill yours out today. Now let's get on to our episode. Hello. Today we are talking with Kat Johnson, a writer living in Santa Cruz, California. She works out of Nextspace Coworking, and I was introduced to her by the fabulous Iris Kavanaugh, who also lives in Santa Cruz. And this was one of those introductions. I think it was made, and then my email inbox got the best of me, and I didn't connect for a long time, and finally connected with Kat and had one of those why haven't we connected earlier moments. So Kat is the lead content creator at Shareable, where she helped position the publication as the number four nonprofit blog in the world with over 100,000 monthly unique visitors. And relevant to the podcast, she also helps co-working spaces and collaborative organizations tell their stories and grow their communities with content. So her focus is on creating lean, effective content strategies that engage a target audience, whether that's existing members, potential members, local entrepreneurs, or the extended collaborative space community. And her content clients include co-working spaces, collaborative organizations, local business development agencies, nonprofits, and regional collaborative alliances. She recently published an ebook entitled Coworking Out Loud, which you can find by searching the word co-working on Amazon. We were talking beforehand, there's actually another Kat Johnson author who writes some saucy books, so you might want to use the co-working search term on Amazon to get her book up pretty quickly. But I read it over the weekend, and we're going to talk about that today. So Kat, thank you for joining me. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Jamie. I'm glad to be here.
So give us a little background about you and how you found co-working.
Yeah, I started freelance writing in 2010. And like a lot of people, I quickly learned that working from home is not all that. There are a lot of distractions. And I knew of co-working at the time, but I hadn't checked it out yet. So there were a couple of spaces locally. I went down to one of them. This beautiful building, it was LEED certified and pretty new. Signed a year-long contract with them, and within a few weeks, I realized that I wanted more than a desk and Wi-Fi. I would just kind of go in and work by myself for several hours and then leave. So after my year was up, I went a few blocks over to Nextspace where Jeremy and Iris were. I walked in and told them that I had been co-working, but that I was looking for community. And I remember Jeremy just being like, well, you found it. You're here. This is it. So, you know, the space has changed since that time, but the community here is outstanding. And that was kind of the beginning of my, I already knew I loved writing and working for myself, but that was the beginning of my kind of deep love and appreciation for co-working, and realizing that spaces can be so different. You know, I connected with more people in my first week here than I had in a year at the other space, you know, so I became, it became really clear to me that co-working is so much about the network and the community of people. That's been years. I've been here since.
Wow. You were an early adopter.
Pretty early, not the earliest, but with Next Space being one of the first
early locations.
Spaces. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is a little bit of a side note, but do you want to talk really quickly about the project you and Iris are working on with libraries?
I'd love to. This is something I think both of us are really passionate about, to try to extend co-working, this amazing thing that exists, try to extend it to people who maybe can't afford it yet, or maybe aren't at a place in their business or project where making a commitment to being a member of a space makes sense. So we're working with the Santa Cruz Public Library System to bring co-working into branches. We're going to start with a branch, but the goal, if it goes well, is to get it into several branches. And we're starting small, just a little pilot right now. And in July, we're going to hit the ground a little bit harder. But in the meantime, we're doing jellies around town. For instance, there's one, we're going to work in people's houses, cafes, existing co-working spaces. And kind of the big picture vision for this is to partner with existing spaces in town and some community organizations like the MA here. Our museum is this outstanding community space. What we hope to do is kind of act as a bridge between people who aren't quite ready to make the commitment to co-working, but could really use that networking and support and learning and community. And then once they're ready, kind of help them find the right space for them. So we're really working it as a partnership between the library, the community, and co-working spaces.
So I love this idea, and I think there may be folks who want to think about that in their own communities. Is there a particular role within the library system that you would recommend approaching to have these conversations?
So there's a gal here who I had interviewed before, so I knew her. At the time I interviewed her, she was the programming director. She's since become like the assistant director, which I didn't know at the time, but I just reached out. She was the person I knew, so I just reached out and said, I'm thinking of doing this. I've been thinking about it for a while. Do you want to have a conversation? And it was one of those like perfect timing things. She got back to me and she said, this weekend we just had a strategic planning retreat and co-working is at the top of the pile.
Yeah.
It was like, and it's funny because I'd been thinking about it for probably 2 years. Hmm. Like, I really ought to do that.
And the
day I sent the email, she's like, yes, we're doing this, let's meet this week, let's happen. So I had the initial meeting with her, and then I got off the call. I remember being so stoked, and I was like calling Iris while I was walking back to Next Space, like, do you want to do this with me? This is happening. There's going to be a budget for it. Like, let's do this together. And we met like within a couple of hours of that first day. So it really just kind of jumped right on it.
I love it. Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. And I also think for smaller communities, so the population of Santa Cruz, I did a quick Google, is in the neighborhood of 62,000. So mm-hmm. Not tiny, not huge.
Right.
So for markets that are, wanting to introduce the concept of co-working, because there's still a lot of places where it's new, this also may be kind of a viable option to sort of start warming people up. And to your point, sort of creating that bridge. So
yep.
Congrats.
Definitely.
That's exciting.
Thank you. And Santa Cruz has a lot of young people. It also has a lot of kind of innovative thinkers. People like to live here. It's beautiful. And there's an open community here. There's a lot of diversity. So there's kind of this already like prime co-working people who like want to do projects and have some vision for something, but don't necessarily know how to get that going. So we hope to connect people who, whether it's like building an app or creating a community project or a startup or whatever, connect those people who have the idea but not the kind of practical skill set or know-how with people who've already been doing it, which, as you know, co-working spaces are full of.
Full, right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Good, right. And that's the piece of community that makes special things happen that don't just happen with places that hold desks.
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely a generosity piece, and it's like the more you give away, the more comes back to you. In co-working spaces, it's like if you kind of adopt that giveaway abundance mentality. It's like everything you need is right there.
So that's a perfect bridge into content marketing, which is about giving away knowledge in the audience that you're hoping to attract. So your book is about this. You spend a lot of your professional time on this, and you and I have talked about kind of why it's important. Share, you know, from your perspective, why is content marketing so critical for co-working space operators?
Yeah, I think one of the thing that I really like about content is it can be whatever you need it to be. Like for some spaces, they need to bring in more members. Some spaces need to, like you were saying, just educate their community about there's this thing called co-working and here's what it is. For other spaces, like in San Francisco, where are there like 80 or 100 or something? I mean, there's
unreal.
Just so,
yeah.
it's just insane, you know, so you can differentiate your space with content. Maybe your goal is to become part of the kind of global co-working conversation, you know, so you can contribute in that way. So content can be this thing that you shape to whatever you need, whether it's business goals or branding, you know, different things like that. So with co-working spaces, for some of the bigger spaces, their biggest concern is brand awareness. But for a lot of small spaces, the concern is keeping the lights on, right? Mm-hmm. And these are the spaces that I hold dear to my heart. And I feel like I'm always kind of urging them. This is a powerful thing. It's not just something, it's not another, like blogging, putting out content isn't just another thing on your to-do list. Like, this is one of the most effective, powerful ways to directly get in front of your target member, like your ideal member. You can reach them where they are. So there's an obvious fit between co-working and content because there's so much to write about. You've got the community aspect. You've got people in your space building and creating amazing things. You've got this network of movers and shakers. You've got this, you know, how it's, you can talk about working with cities and business development associations. There's just a ton of content potential there.
You kind of talk about this in your book, in content marketing being, you know, not the typical background for an operator. If an operator is new to content marketing, where did they start?
And most are, right? That one of the things is this an area of weakness for space operators, but it's really an area of weakness for a lot of different industries because mm-hmm. content marketing is fairly new, right? Not too long ago, people were just doing advertising, kind of spray and pray.
Banner ads,
to,
right, totally.
Yeah, hoping to reach people, and that just has not proved to be a good use of limited budgets at all. So the two kind of essential pieces of content is knowing exactly who you're trying to reach and distilling that down as specific as you possibly can. You know, maybe spaces already have like a customer persona or avatar that they've worked out. If not, it's just kind of filling out who is that member. Like, are they working from home? Do they have kids? What's their age range? What are they working on? What blogs are they reading? What are they struggling with? What are their day-to-day challenges? You know, kind of really getting a clear picture of who it is that you'd like to attract into your space. And then the next piece is how can you help them? What can you put out that they need, whether it's resources or tipping off about something or maybe comparing two organizational software pieces, or maybe it's talking about events that exist locally that would be, you know, help them build their network. So knowing who you're trying to reach and then how you can help them. That's kind of the heart of content marketing. And then from there, if they're just starting out, once you're really clear on those two things, you start brainstorming ideas, keeping in mind, SEO, that could be a whole other mm-hmm. podcast, but keeping in mind keywords that you would like to be found for, like how are people searching for, if not co-working in your town, then you know, freelancing or entrepreneurial events or startup or, you know, things like that. Try to get clear on how people may find you. brainstorm content ideas around that. And then honestly, you put them on a schedule and you start creating content. And content's not a sprint, it's definitely a marathon. You can't expect that your first post or even your first five posts are going to establish you, but you stay consistent with it. And after time, you find that people reference your articles, people are calling you because of articles. People are linking back to you. People are commenting and, you know, sharing your stuff on social. And you're, what that's doing, you're developing this whole platform that exists beyond just your static website sitting there with your hours and rates, right? You've created this kind of organic back and forth with your ideal community.
And content, I mean, when it comes to Google, I mean, sort of fundamentally, you're trying to reach an audience, but Google has to help you do that, right? So you and Google have to be pretty tight. And the way to get tight with Google is content. So it's like a sort of a positive reinforcing cycle where Google will reward you for having relevant content, and then it helps your audience find you, which helps Google like you more and build authority and that kind of thing, and help you really get in front of who you need to get in front of. It is funny. I remember when I first started Innerspace in Chicago and sitting down and thinking, okay, I have to do blog posts. And my mindset was like, what do I have to say? And that's, the, you know, you address this in your ebook. You're like, well, it's not about what you have to say. It's about, right, what is your audience interested in and what are their pain points? And it's like, I even, you know, I have a marketing degree, a master's in entrepreneurship and finance, but lots of marketing classes, and you know, even like all that training, like I still sat down and said, well, what do I have to talk about,
right?
And so it's, yeah, it's so helpful to just sit through and think about the process of who's the audience and what do they care about. And even so, one of my the blog posts on our site that gets us the most traffic is a blog post about standing desks. I think I did it when IKEA released their first standing desk. We did a review and, you know, mention some others, and we just get tons of traffic from it. And some of it's probably not, you know, relevant traffic. Some of it will be local people, and that'll be helpful. But it's interesting sort of the things you can hit upon, you know, for entrepreneurs or people who work from home in general that can get you a lot of traffic. So we ended up kind of ranking for that, and that's served us a little bit. But
yeah, definitely. And, you know, maybe people are putting in like IKEA standing desk review, and you guys are popping up. It may be attracting someone who is never going to co-work, but that kind of illustrates how powerful it can be if you get that keyword phrase right.
Yeah.
You know, as I talk about a lot, there are a few posts I've written for different publications that, like, tiny house villages we have in the headline. And when people Google that, it's like the first thing that pops up. That thing has gotten hundreds of thousands of views. Right. So it's a little trickier if you're trying to rank for like co-working in San Francisco.
Yeah.
But there are definitely smaller markets. You can definitely get those top spots. And there are things that within the industry, and you have to be creative and think about it. But if you get the keyword phrasing right, you can rank. Like just even getting with my ebook, I really stressed with the title and with the keywords and stuff of how that was going to rank on Amazon. And, you know, I released it like a week and a half, couple weeks ago, and it's in the second spot on Amazon. And granted, there aren't a ton of books about co-working, but having that pop up in the key thing was not unintentional, right? Like, keywords and SEO
matter,
is your best friend with content.
Yep. And I will mention, so we have another episode, number 23, that talks a little bit more about keywords and local SEO tips. So kind of goes hand in hand. It can be a lot to think about. So somebody who's said, okay, I get, you know, I'm committed, I understand the importance of it, I understand the need to sit down and create a plan. How can, your book talks a little bit about how an operator can think about resources, because they may feel they're a little bit resource constrained if they're not a writer. What are some resources that they can, how should they think about that, and who can they draw on for their content help?
Yeah, so if it's one person, which is not unusual, like the owner or operator is doing everything, right? One thing that I try to encourage is you don't have to do everything in one day. Like if you do 20 minutes a day, like on the first day, if you don't already have a content calendar, you're brainstorming ideas and choosing the best ideas. On the next day, put together a rough outline, you know, take 15, 20 minutes. On the next day, spend 20 minutes filling it out. The day after that, go through, tighten it up, add anything. And then the next day, edit it, give it a once over, throw an image on it and hit publish. That way you're not having to block out like 2 or 3 hours to do this project, which just doesn't happen, right? That's why people are like, I'm just not going to do it.
Right.
But if you give it a little bit of time each day, and something I really, this is how I do most of my pieces, no matter how small or large, I really kind of do it in these stages, because another thing I like about it is it lets my subconscious work on it a little bit. Like I'll think of things the next day, like, oh, I need to add this, or I should clarify that, or, you know, so kind of spread it out over some time. It tends to be tighter and clearer than it is if I just sit down and put something together in
sort of one and done it
a couple hours. Yeah. And then I'll go back and I see typos and I see, oh, I should have mentioned this or whatever. So I really like that kind of spacing it out. And so people who are doing everything themselves, that's a good strategy too. And then it never feels like a huge project. You're like, all I need to do today is brainstorm ideas and choose the best one. All I need to do the next day is outline. You know, it's like these really manageable chunks. If you have a handful of people or even another person who's into helping with content, figure out what people's strengths are. This is something like someone may not be a great writer. You know, they grammar may not be great, or they may just not have a flow, but they might be great at talking with people and finding out, you know, different things about people. So they can do Q&As, or they can do, maybe they're a good photographer, so they can do like a photo essay about standing desks or whatever. So I'm really into the idea of finding out what each person who's going to contribute, like really playing to their strengths rather than trying to squeeze somebody who's not a writer into the role of writing, because that's never going to work out.
Like, for example, right, if you have a community manager, like mine is, I got lucky, she's has a real passion for design, but writing is not her strength. And so I know after reading your book, I thought, okay, how can I get contributions that are helpful, even though someone else is going to do the writing?
Right. So with her, maybe like for a GWA post or something, maybe she puts together a list of the best, you know, design tips or how to your kitchen or however, whatever you're going to focus on, and get that outlined. And then you or someone else comes in and fills in, you know, cleans up the copy or whatever and hits publish on it. But that's a great example of like, there's a ton of valuable information in that person. You just have to make it readable.
So in addition to your ebook, you also have a blog, and I am subscribed to the blog and I get these inspirational posts in my inbox, which is awesome because you know, it sort of removes the excuse of like, I don't have, of course you need to have a strategy and know how to integrate these into what you're doing, but 6 types of posts for your co-working blog, 50 blog post prompts for your busy co-working space teams, 7 ways to launch a content strategy on a shoestring budget. Like, you are full of ideas. So if you're kind of sitting there and you're working on your strategy or a content plan and trying to, you know, outline posts for the next couple of months, you have to, so it's katjohnson.co.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like leaves no excuse there, because you give all sorts of ideas and approaches, which I love.
I feel like people probably get tired of me being like, you need to do this.
No, it's so good because people know they need to, right? I think they need the reminder that it's critical, because it's hard, to your point, it's so hard to make time for. And the other point that you make that I think is important is it's much better to post once or twice a month and be consistent than to, you know, go crazy and post, you know, twice a week for 4 weeks and then let it drop off.
Right. That happens a lot where people get really stoked and they're going to do this and they have some time. So they churn out a handful of posts within a week or two. And then the next post, if they even have one, isn't for like a year or something. And I totally get it. Like for me, writing comes naturally, but it's also like co-working space operators are completely overwhelmed with a million things. And Content's an easy one to bump to the bottom of the pile. You know, it's not a bill you have to pay. It's not, there's not someone knocking on your door. It's like this kind of optional thing. But I can't stress how powerful it can be in kind of establishing a platform, a dynamic back and forth with people. And the email bit, if you want to chat more about that, I put in, you know, I link to the post from that week, and I also then try to provide just kind of like interesting odds and ends from around the collaborative space world, like inspiring projects, or here's a cool, you know, this is what someone's doing, but and maybe a productivity tip or two. And that my email has morphed quite a bit, actually, to find something that people, that feels right to me, where I get to talk about content, but I also get to talk about community and the importance of collaboration, and that people want to open and read. And I feel like I'm at a good stride with it now. And I like doing it. I keep it as short, you know, kind of short and sweet as possible, but also try to stay kind of stay on people about their content that they need to be doing.
Totally. Well, I mean, but this brings up a good point, kind of a good bridge into, you know, you talk in your book also about the importance of email list building versus just relying on social media. And there are two pieces here. One, if you don't have, you can curate content all day long, but everybody is doing that, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't differentiate you to just retweet and repost on Facebook. Having unique content that you've developed and that you own is a big differentiator, and it gives you material, and it can be evergreen material, right? Like mm-hmm. we do that for our space and for the Global Workspace Association. We have pieces that, you know, we plug into our social media schedule that can rerun and link to our site. And, you know, we have an email list building prompt on the website to get people to opt in, because you own that email list, right? Versus like your Meerkat example in your book, which I'll let you share, is like drives that point home really clearly.
Yeah. That's like the extreme example. It's such a great one. There's this kind of social media influencer named Suzanne, and she built up a huge following of 40,000 people on Meerkat, which, if you don't know, was a streaming video app. You know, it was like Periscope and Meerkat were kind of jostling for position. And then an audience of 40,000 people, which is just massive. And then Meerkat shut down.
Yeah.
And it was like short notice. And there wasn't a way, like, here, you can export all your people or something. It was just gone.
Done.
And
yeah.
So, you know, since then, she's kind of spread things out. She does like Instagram Live. She does Snapchat. She's on Twitter. She's on Periscope. So kind of spreading around. But it was a huge blow to her audience. And I think it drives home the importance of email list building, that all these platforms that are great, you know, we love them, we use them, they're somebody else's real estate, and they can change the rules. And, you know, a few years ago, we were all building up Facebook pages, and people would get thousands or tens of thousands of followers to their Facebook page. And then Facebook kind of changed the rules and said, we're going to show it to this tiny percentage of your followers unless you pay to boost the post. And it makes sense to boost some posts, you know, if it's an evergreen, or if you're, you know, if it's promoting an event or a launch of some sort. But it doesn't make sense for a lot of spaces and projects, and especially like nonprofits, to have to pay just to get their Facebook post in front of people. So that's another example of having your email list. Like, I always tell people, the best time to have started an email list is yesterday. The second best time is today. Like, do it straight away. Like, before you do your next blog post or anything, get an email list going.
And the other piece about the content that you generate is, I feel like it gives you sort of an excuse to reach out to people, not just to, hey, we have a, you know, an office open or a dedicated desk, or we're running a special, or, you know, trying to promote and attract members, but you're building a relationship with them and giving them content that you think can be useful for them, and sort of also buying the right to get in front of them when you do have space or, you know, memberships open that you'd like them to take advantage of?
Yeah, the with email, as with blogging, like the last thing you want to do is sit down in front of the computer and go, what should I say? Mm-hmm. You know, not know where you're going, what you're trying to do. So getting, yeah, like you say, it gives people an excuse, like here's a new post. And some, you know, on some newsletters I'm on, that it's as quick as just wanted to let you know there's a new post, mm-hmm. here's the link, and out. But, you know, but you're like in someone's inbox, you're doing some little small bit of branding and maybe reminding them about your space or inviting them in. Maybe there's a call to action at the end of your email, which in your blog post, there always should be a call to action, whether it's signing up for your email list, following you on social, come in for a free trial, something like that. Once you have people's attention, you want to then present something, you know, give them a next step to do. So yeah, the email piece, you have something that is unique to you and valuable that you can share. Did I answer your question? Was there another piece there?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. And so speaking of kind of next steps, if someone is saying, Kat, I hear you, I need to get on my content strategy, I get it. But you know, so they should read your ebook for sure. They should subscribe to your newsletter. What else? So I think you mentioned you offer, like, if somebody needs some handholding to sit down and create a content strategy, like they know that piece feels too big to me, I can't do it on my own. You offer some help with that. Is that right?
Yeah, that's definitely right. It can be as simple as like a 30-minute ask me anything where people either need like baby steps or else they're doing something but it's not quite working, and we just want to kind of fine tune a strategy that's already in place. We can do that, and then, you know, going up from there, we can work together to set up a whole content strategy with your calendar and develop your member persona, who it is you're trying to attract, what resources, you know, we can kind of go as big as we want from there in terms of how much I can help them. But it's important to me that no matter where someone is on this kind of spectrum of content marketing and no matter what their resources are, that I'm able to help them. So I try to make it where there's something all the way from, you know, a quick ebook and blog posts up to like, okay, let's do this whole big project together. So I really encourage people to reach out. You can get in touch through my website, katjohnson.co. It's Kat with a C, which is a frequent question I get. Every preschooler knows how to spell my name, but most adults get it wrong. I just encourage people to reach out, that, you know, I'm happy to point you in the right direction, get you going.
I love it. And you're at Kat Johnson on Twitter.
Yep. I got the handle. And, even though the saucy author, she's like, you are the one. It's you who got that handle. She couldn't be nicer. Yet our lives could not be more different. It's been funny.
So we'll also include links to the ebook and to Kat's contact info in the show notes, which are at everythingcoworking.com/46. Kat, thank you so much for joining us today. And
it's been great. Yeah, thank you, Jamie. It's been a lot of fun chatting with you.
And also thank you for your contributions, because to your point, I mean, the ebook and the all the free advice on your blog are invaluable. And, you know, you're just giving a lot to the coworking community, which we all appreciate. So thank you for that.
Oh, thanks for saying that. I am so thrilled, like this movement. I just am so passionate and thrilled to be a part of it. Such amazing people. I love the collaborative ethos. I love this kind of global community that, you know, connecting with people like you. And just like this network that just keeps growing of incredible people. I love being part of it.
It's good stuff. Yeah. Awesome. Well, enjoy the rest of your beautiful, sunny Santa Cruz day.
Thank you, Jamie. I know. Beach walk tonight. I can't wait.
Good for you. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.